The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com, and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence, and now here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Good evening, listeners. This is Divya, my favorite time of the week, because I get to be with you. And for those of you who have got my books, I really, really thank you. A lot of people have reached out and shared that you have received a lot of value from my books, Expert to Influencer and The Entrepreneur's Garden, as well as I want to thank you because the profits from the books are going to entrepreneurs impacted by COVID-19. And as you'll recall, I'm going to request each and every one of you to go out there and share 1 hour. Without any expectations, without any strings attached, just go and give that 1 hour every month to somebody else where you can help someone. And think about it, 100, 150 million people, it can add up to massive, gigantic amount of time that we can use to help others and bring about a lot of change. So today, we are going to have a conversation on one of the tough topics, negotiation. And we use negotiation either in our personal lives or as we are working in the workplace or as an entrepreneur. We use negotiation day in and day out. So welcome, Cindy, and welcome, Paul.
Hi there. Thanks for having us, Divya. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you both. So Cindy, can you share a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am I've been an attorney for 30 years, and I am the founder of Women on Purpose and the creator of the Art of Feminine Negotiation Programs, or Persuasion, as I like to call it. You know, when I had my epiphany that everything we thought we knew about negotiation is wrong. So I'm a Canadian, born in sort of a low rental apartment, and very driven to succeed. And I'm so thrilled to be here.
Awesome to have you. How about you, Paul?
I consult and speak internationally, and I have helped, I think, thousands of business leaders and professionals deal with one particular problem. And the problem is that you can say it, but that doesn't mean that anybody will hear it, or if they hear it, that they'll remember it. Or if they hear it and remember it, that they'll actually act on it. So I work in the area of high stakes communications. And my latest book is called You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. And here's what's really depressing. 8 seconds is the new attention span. And goldfish have a 9-second attention span. So goldfish are beating us.
Yeah, and that's the results of social media and our busy, busy world. So it's more so than ever important that we pay attention to mindfulness, being present in the moment, not just living a staged life. Because so many times what happens is, oh, I got to take my selfie. I got to appear this way. I got to do that. And don't get me wrong, folks, even before the era of social media, there used to be staged, but not so much.
Yeah.
So it's very critical. Let's start out, Paul, with you. When you were a child, do you recall any moments from those childhood that have left an impact on you?
Oh, well, yeah, certainly there are hundreds of those moments, but I'll tell you one in particular, and it actually was, when I was about 20 years old. I was shy growing up, and I was very slow to date. I didn't date anybody in high school. And I remember finally getting up the courage to ask a woman out. It was the summer after freshman year at college. And we happened to be taking a class together that summer. Anyway, I asked her out for ice cream. And we go to this ice cream shop, and I order a milkshake. I think I live in Boston, they call it a frap sometimes, but it's basically milkshake. And I remember being so nervous, I realized I was going to be unable to pick up the milkshake. And finally, luckily, she excused herself to use the restroom. I don't think she was gone more than like 3 minutes. But in those 3 minutes, I downed the entire milkshake.
Oh,
so I learned
funny.
Something important. That was an interesting moment because I learned something important about nervousness and confidence.
And what was that learning?
Well, that there are a couple things, but one is that to become confident, you have to actually go through the fire of being nervous. You have to do the thing that may be difficult or even anxiety provoking and do it over and over and over again. I eventually, before getting married, I must have had at least 50 or more first dates. But I eventually got to the point where I could approach a woman and ask her out without completely falling apart. and it's just practice.
Right.
It's just practice.
Absolutely. That definitely makes sense. And how about you, Cindy?
Oh, let's see. As Paul was talking, I was thinking about that as well. And practice, Paul, absolutely, like most things in life, right? I mean, it's funny. We expect people to have coaches for sports or music, and yet we don't think about practicing or getting coaching for probably the most important experience, which is our life. So for me, I think, Divya, one of the things, it wasn't impactful at the time, but more recently, I've come back to think and go, oh my gosh, that speaks volumes about sort of my character, but also that deep conditioning. Because, and I'm dating myself here, you may or may not remember when they used to have Saturday matinees and you'd go pay your quarter or whatever the heck it was to see some tacky Elvis Presley movie. So every Saturday, my sister and I would be given, you know, the money for the show and the money to buy ourselves a treat. And invariably, and this could speak to what a strange child I was, I felt this compulsion to have to help and to pitch in. So I rarely spent my treat money on a treat for myself. I would go to the local store on the way home and buy a loaf of bread to bring home, which is kind of a sad commentary about, you know, what I thought about our economic circumstances growing up. But also, it wasn't until much later that I realized how deeply rooted that conditioning is. And for young women, young girls in particular, and I think it carries on to womanhood, about our need to have to self-sacrifice, to be the caregiver, to be the nurturer, to be the one who martyrs ourselves in the interest of other people, to be that people pleaser. So, and I didn't have that epiphany until, you know, much more recently when I'm working with women about stepping into and leveraging their strength and stepping into the full force of their feminine power and realizing as I'm unpacking some of those limiting beliefs and conditioning that they've carried through life, how much I was, like all of us, a victim to that as well. So,
Now, this is going to be powerful because think about it. When we're negotiating, it's not about gender, or it's not about who is sitting across the table. It's about two different parties and what can we bring to the table as far as negotiation is concerned. From Paul, you know, your perspective, from a male perspective, and then if you both are open, I'd like to have even a prompt and we can make a point to negotiate. How does that sound for both of you?
Say that again, Divya. I didn't catch what you said there.
So I would throw out a prompt, which would be a made up situation on the fly. And we can just kind of go at it and see how we can negotiate, like sitting at the different sides of the table. Are you up for it?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. Okay.
We'll see how that goes. Well, yeah, you know, we could negotiate. I think, Cindy, we could negotiate this, but I'm game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's such an important skill because all of life is a negotiation, you know, whether we're negotiating with our intimate partner about what movie to watch or multi-million dollar deals. And, you know, for so long, we've been led to believe it's all about the competition, when in fact, the opposite is true. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, folks. I am glad that you're up for it. So let's get a little bit more peek into your personal lives. So Cindy, if you can kind of tell us from the time you were bringing a loaf of bread home, how did your journey traverse? And how did you grow up into, you can call in your 20s, 30s, you know? And we're not going to go by the decade, so that's
yeah, don't worry. I'm not going to give you a be here all night.
Yep.
Okay, so I'd say the abbreviated version. I mean, I grew up, you know, they talk about being on the other, wrong side of the tracks or the other side of the tracks. For me growing up, we were on the other side of the creek. You know, I grew up in a low rental apartment. My dad worked in a factory. And I think a lot of my sense of, you know, the reason I, one of the key reasons I became a social justice attorney was that desire. You know, I remember my dad at our little kitchen table always saying, everybody deserves to be treated with dignity and respect. And that's something that I held so deeply at my core. I remember my dad always saying, I don't care if it's a janitor or a brain surgeon, neither of them can do the job without the other. So it's important to just be proud and bring 100% all the time. And that really stuck with me. And I do remember when I had to switch to a middle school for grades 7 and 8. And, you know, as much as I grew up in a tough neighborhood, you don't think of it as that as a kid. It's just home, right? But when I switched schools in grade 7 and 8, all of a sudden some of those new friends I was meeting from the other side of the creek weren't allowed to come home and play at my place because of where I lived. And I really never made the connection to you until I saw the look on my dad's face that somehow, you know, his station in life would hold us back. And I think that was a really pivotal moment for me when I, you know, I said in the intro about being driven. And I think it was partly to just sort of prove that we're not less than because of where we come from. You know, I mean, maybe I'm adding a layer that wasn't really at play there, but I do believe that was a part of it. So I was very driven to go from high school to university to law school, sort of getting those straight A's. But always knew that I wanted to make a difference and have an impact. It wasn't about the money for me. It was about making positive change in the world. So I practiced social justice for 30 years. But I also had this switch because I remember in law school taking a negotiation course where we were basically negotiating for our marks, which I probably wouldn't have taken the course if I'd known that, because you had to negotiate against your classmates and whoever got the highest negotiated settlement got the highest mark. And I won virtually every one of those simulated exercises that year. And I'm not saying that to brag, but because it wasn't until years later when I started the practice of law, you know, a fresh 20-something out of school in a male-dominated niche representing a lot of trade unions. So I was almost always the only woman in the room for a very long time. And feeling like, oh my gosh, to have my voice heard, I have to really bring it. I have to bring toughness. I have to be seen to be tough. And my clients called me the Barracuda, which they meant as a compliment. And I'm embarrassed now to say I wore like a badge of honor for a long time. But there is a high cost that comes from negotiating from that place. And that's when I had my epiphany, because it starts to affect your professional relationships, your personal relationships, and ultimately your sense of self. And that was the driving force for me to realize that it was actually the strength of feminine traits. And when I use that term, it's not gender-based. Men and women, we all have masculine and feminine energy. And for too long, we've defined success based on that traditional competitive model, when in fact, the better results come from bringing those feminine traits to the fore. Mm-hmm. So that's right. My mission.
No, absolutely. Oh, some powerful thoughts there. Paul?
Yeah, so sorry, can you give me the
prompt? Yes, basically how your journey traversed from the time that you had shared about this naive young gentleman going to taking a date to an ice cream shop, and how did your career evolve?
Well, I'll actually go back a earlier year, senior year in high school. We had, if you wanted, we had the opportunity to teach a class. And I had this English teacher, Mr. Wolf, who I just, he was my favorite teacher. And I just had this special relationship with him. And so I signed up to teach his class to fellow 12th graders. And it was an hour-long class. And I still remember it was, we were doing a novel. I can't remember the name of the novel, but oddly, I remember the subtitle of the novel was The Story of a Man with Character. It was a Thomas Hardy novel. And the subtitle was The Story of a Man with Character. And so there I was up in front of this room of peers. And it was probably the best hour of high school for me. And there's another girl involved in this. There was a girl that I had this crush on ever since like third grade. And at the end of the class, a number of these kids came over, just stood by the desk to just say basically congratulations, including this girl that I had the crush on. Her interest apparently wasn't deep enough to keep her in line. So we never actually exchanged words. But at the end of that, after everybody left, I sat down with Mr. Wolf, and he said, he was just full of praise and said, you're really a natural teacher. And so I have been consulting and speaking for some 30 plus years and also writing books, but that's kind of the anchor. I think of everything I do as teaching, as being a teacher. And of course, part of being a teacher is being a perpetual student, right? Because the best teachers are constantly the ones, you know, Socrates went around Athens, Greece, telling everybody he knew nothing. And that was kind of his opening line, I know nothing. But he was an excellent teacher because he knew how to engage other people in dialogue, which has always been a style that I admire. So I think that was, I think people, you know, I think it's useful. It's really useful. The questions that you're asking, Divya, are really good because it's useful to kind of think about some pivotal moments. I work with a lot of people. I've done this as an experiment. If you ask people, tell me your two or three biggest weaknesses, or write down your two or three biggest weaknesses. I won't ask you what they are, but no one has any trouble identifying their two or three biggest weaknesses. They don't necessarily want to say them in public, and I never ask people to do that. But then if you flip it and you say, okay, now write down two or three of your biggest strengths, almost everybody struggles. So people have these strengths that are invisible, and by thinking through some important childhood memories, sometimes it provides clues as to what those might be.
Well, you have brought up a good point, and you said that you don't want to ask, and why don't we dare ourselves? I'll go ahead and get started with a couple of weaknesses, a couple of strengths. So one of my weaknesses is I'm not a fan of doing video, and you might be like, okay, you're sitting here doing a TV show and you're saying that. Yes, to this day, I'm not a fan of it. I do it because of the marketing trends, because that's the best way to connect with the audience. And here's what I want to talk about is one of my strengths is that I love providing value. I love making a difference. So if making a difference involves me getting into that zone of discomfort, I'll do it. So the way I look at it, Paul, is that we have qualities, and those qualities can be a strength in some situations, and they can be a weakness in some situations. I'll go and share another of my weaknesses. I can be a whole lot empathetic, and then sometimes you can experience empathy burnout. I've learned to separate myself and create those boundaries, and yet sometimes it does happen again. So similarly, I would say that's a weakness for myself, but at the same token, it allows me to create compassion and build meaningful connections. Cindy, I know Paul's not asking you that question. Are you up for it?
I am, and I love your insight on that, because it's I don't know that I've ever quite thought of it that way as well, about the connection between those strengths and weaknesses, how sometimes our weaknesses drive our strengths, actually, or vice versa. Like in your case, your strength allows you to overcome that weakness. So I love that thought. And I'm definitely up for it. So for me, I would say one of my biggest weaknesses, and it's something you have to be growing every day if you're going to be an effective teacher. And in my business, I mean, if I'm going to be out there teaching other women how to negotiate and leverage their power, I need to be able to be growing every day as well. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think I still have to be very intentional about is that driver, striver, achiever, right? I mean, and again, it's a bit of a, you know, in some periods of my life, it was definitely a strength and asset. It allowed me to be persistent and to pick myself up and brush myself off when I fell down. But it also can be a weakness, because keeping that work-life balance and keeping those priorities where you're making sure you're putting the big rocks in your daily life vase every day before you pour the sand in the water. When you're in that driver, striver, achiever mode, sometimes that can be a real challenge. So I would say that is definitely a weakness. And having said that, I would say that persistence has definitely been a strength of mine. And whether it's being persistent and pushing ahead with a passion of mine, if I think I can make a difference, very similar to what you'd said, Divya, I want to make a difference in the world, right? I want to be able to have an impact that helps lift up people, particularly people who are maybe more vulnerable. So having that persistence when it seems like the world is pushing us down, and especially given their success model, that definition based on that competitive money at all costs, there are days when it feels like you're banging your head against the wall. And certainly in my social justice practice, it took a lot of conviction and persistence to keep going for the greater good, even in the face of what sometimes felt like incredible obstacles. So definitely that would be, I would say, a definite weakness and a strength. Another weakness I could share as well, I do have a tendency, because of that wanting to help, sometimes that can cross over into that enabling. Ourselves. It's ironically one of the things I'm constantly spending time in my coaching practice as well, is getting people past that martyr syndrome. As women in particular, we kind of wear that like a badge of honor, but definitely end up not allowing people in my life to be the best version of themselves, where they need to fall down and pick themselves up and be really resilient and resourceful. If you're always there enabling, sometimes that can be a form of weakness. So, but the strength that's tied to that would be that deep compassion. That's something, even when things don't always work out, I wouldn't trade that for the world. Having that compassion, both for people in my personal sphere, but even on the broader sort of global stage. So,
yeah, no, definitely what you're sharing is, and to me, the way I see myself is that I'm perfectly imperfect.
Love that.
And rather than segregating them, if we blend them together, pull them in together, and work with both of the areas, it seems to create a perfect mix of a successful life. And Paul, I'm going to ask you your question. If you'd like to share your one or two weaknesses and your one or two strengths, and how do you use them?
Well, I remember there was a period, I would say late 20s to mid 30s, where once a year, I've been self-employed forever. And what that's involved for me is having to basically keep creating and recreating an answer to the question, what do I want to do with my life? Right. So I've been a consultant. And I've had, from the outside, I've had a fairly steady, consistent way of earning a living, but there have been a lot of swerves in the path. So there was a period from late 20s to mid 30s where once a year I would go see a very, very good career counselor. And usually I would go see him because I would be at a fork in the road. Should I do this or should I do that? And at one point he said to me, at the end of your life, you're the kind of person that's going to look back and say, I could have done more. No matter what you accomplish, there's always going to be some part of you that's not going to be satisfied. So I got triggered a little bit by what you said, Cindy, the sort of need for achievement can be a strength. By the way, I mean, people that have a high need for achievement, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to achieve more than someone with a moderate or low level of achievement. But I think this feeling of being driven, this high need for achievement, I remember there's an interesting book called Strengths Finder, which is designed to help people figure out their strengths. And there are about 30 plus strengths, and you can read the book in about 8 minutes. Anyway, one of the strengths is called achievement. And they quote a woman who says, who's high in this, and she says, for me, every day begins at zero. And that just really so resonates for me. And I think what it means is it's like you have to achieve, even if it's like a Saturday or a Sunday, there's the feeling of, you have to accomplish something, even if it's like going to get the groceries or doing a laundry, whatever. So I think that, as I'm closer now, I'm beyond the middle of my life, moving through it, it seems like an accelerating speed. I keep thinking about what that career counselor said. In terms of strengths, I'm a communication consultant, and I have about 12 different programs that I do, working with business leaders, business professionals, typically at fairly large corporations. And one of the 12 things I do is a workshop on presentation skills. And before COVID, it used to be a 2-day program, very intense, with maybe 6-7 people, as I say, for 2 days. And I would videotape people and they would practice little segments. And this thing would happen over and over where somebody would get up and practice something. And then I would say, why don't you try saying it like this? And people would look and say, how did you just do that? Like, how are you able to say my thing better than I'm able to say it? I don't get how you did that. And I would, the first few times I heard that, I thought, that's no big deal. It's nothing. That's nothing. I'm not doing anything. And then I heard it enough times that I began to realize the thing about strengths for anybody that I was trying to point to earlier, which is the thing that you're often really strong in is almost and maybe completely invisible to you. Other people can see it, but you can't. And the reason you can't is because you were almost, not exactly, but almost born into the world with it. So it's always just been part of who you are. And so for you, it feels like, well, that's nothing special. That's just everybody can do this. It's no big deal. So I think it's a really valuable thing for people one way or another to try to spend some time and go beyond weaknesses. Yeah, it's important to know what your weaknesses are because those things can derail you. But the thing about weaknesses are they'll never become strengths, really. I think you can neutralize them. You can neutralize them so that they don't derail you. But like, for example, if you came into my office, you'd go, my God, this is a mess. this is just a complete mess. And it's a weakness. I hate filing things. So, you know, I can go for a pretty long time and then I'll realize I can't find anything in this office and mm-hmm. I'll straighten it out. And then, you know, eventually it'll go back to being a mess again.
Right.
And I'm just never, organizing my office will never be a strength. I can neutralize it, but it will never be a strength. So it's really important for people to, I think, to identify. And that doesn't need to be a long list, just two or three things. I always tell people, if you were in a room with nine other people, there are 10 of you in the room, what is something that you can do either easier or faster or just better than seven of those people?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be the best person.
Yeah, definitely. Good points there.
Yeah.
So,
but what would that be? And that's the thing that, you know, we could call your strength or your magic trick or your superpower.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Absolutely. Well, Cindy and Paul, you know, thank you for playing along and sharing what you consider as your weaknesses and strengths. So now we are going to get in the nitty-gritty of negotiations. I'm going to invite both of you to share very quick stories where not the results, but situation where you helped negotiation happen. Just a situation. And then, depending on the time, like how much time is left, we will tackle both of those situations. Who would like to go first, Paul or Cindy?
I'm happy to jump in, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And just touching back on the strengths thing, I think that's that was an interesting conversation, David. I'm glad we went off in that direction. I think it's such a powerful, and I always encourage my clients to keep what I call a brag list as well. I think it is so important. Mm-hmm. And I make them write down, what are 25 things you love about yourself that you can be proud of? And then have them create this list and keep adding to it every day and reading it before you go to bed at night to remind yourself about those things that you have a strength. So for negotiation, I would say, one, it's interesting. It goes back to the idea about not being too attached to any one result, right? And it's what I call the deadly sin. Attachment is one of the seven deadly sins of negotiation, because often we get that tunnel vision, right? When we're so attached to a particular outcome that we're not open to seeing other creative solutions on the table. And especially because I believe in bringing that rapport and empathy to the table as well. I remember one negotiation in my litigation practice where, as a lawyer, and, you know, my client wanted something in particular. They wanted to make sure that their membership were never going to be able to be called out by management and questioned about something without having representation. And management was equally adamant that they had to have the ability to be able to call on employees whenever they wanted, stop them as they're getting off, you know, their shift, and be able to ask them questions. And both sides at first, and admittedly at the beginning, myself included, again, got so entrenched in each of those positions. It's like, we've got contractual rights. You can't do it. We're not giving up those contractual rights. And all of a sudden I just took a pause and took a step back and said, Cindy, practice what you preach here. You know, bring that rapport building, bring that empathy, truly put yourself in the shoes of the other party. What is it that's driving them right now? What's their deep why? And then was able to come up with a solution where we could actually give them what they want in a more.
So I would invite you to take a pause here, because we are going to go and look at the situation, how it can be dealt with.
Ah, sorry. Okay. Yeah. All right. I thought Yes. Give an example of where we'd actually done it. All right, I'm with you.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing. And Paul, if you can share just the situation, not what you did, a situation where two different parties are coming to the table, and I am happy to share that. I'd love for y'all to share.
Yeah.
So, Cindy, you have shared, and Paul, how about you? One of the cases.
Well, I mentioned that I've written a couple of books, and the last book is called You've Got 8 Seconds. That's a book about communication secrets, not a book about negotiation. That was the third of three books that I've done. The first
right.
book.
Why don't we focus on the situation?
I'm about to. So the first book was a book about job interviewing. And that was a book which is now out of print called Ready, Aim, You're Hired. And it was meant for interviewees. So I actually had a whole chapter, and I don't do this much anymore, but I used to work with people who had been fired or who had been laid off on strategies for getting their next job, including how to negotiate a salary. And so I think that is often, for many people, one of the most stressful negotiations, because you really want the job, you really want to be paid fairly for the job, but sometimes those two things feel like they're in conflict. Like, if I press too hard for the money, I'm going to lose the job. So I can share with you, either now or later, the most interesting experience I had looking for a job and negotiating a salary. But the principles apply also to buying and selling anything, buying and selling a house, buying and selling a car. There are just certain, and I'm sure, Cindy, you're well-versed in these, there are just certain very savvy negotiation principles that aren't necessarily complicated, but they're very helpful. Mm-hmm. And many people don't know what they are.
All right. I'm happy to be the guinea pig here. So let's say I am somebody who's been laid off. And of course, the mindset is not at the best. And now I'm looking for a job and I need to have a good salary because I'm supporting a family. So and here's folks, you know, Cindy and Paul, I'm just going to kind of let you all jump in and just kind of think I'm your client, both of yours. How will we get started?
Well, the first thing I would tell you is that negotiation starts before the face-to-face, before COVID, before the face-to-face encounter. That to be a really good negotiator, to also be a really good communicator, you have to be well prepared. And so if you're negotiating salary, your part of your preparation is to get some really good data on what companies are paying for the types of positions that you might be applying for. That's the first step, to understand what the range is that you should be targeting. Mm-hmm. And then another part of preparation is thinking through and rehearsing, whether it's with another person or with yourself, how you'll handle certain difficult questions around salary. That's a really important thing that I tell people around communication. If you're giving a presentation, you need to know the presentation, and there are certain ways that I help people with that. But you also need to be as prepared for, I always tell people, this is true whether it's a presentation or negotiation or probably six other things, think of six most likely questions and how you'd answer them. And then think of the six nightmare questions, which might never come up, but would really rattle you if they did, and how you'd answer those too. So that's the way I would start.
Okay. That's fantastic. How about you, Cindy?
Well, I would sit you down and say, okay, you know what, Divya, the first and most important negotiation that you're ever going to have in your life is a negotiation with yourself, negotiating your mindset. So when you're coming now, I recognize it's probably a challenging time for you and you're laid off. There's probably a little bit of fear there. So I'm going to want to talk to you about that as well. But I really want you to be open to negotiating your mindset, because one of the most important things for you now going into this new job search and looking for getting a new position and getting that salary you deserve is really going to be owning your worth and value. And then, Divya, I would take you through sort of some exercises to have you recognize your worth, all of the things that you've achieved, any and all of the commendations you received, all of those strengths that you bring to bear, both the tangible and the intangible, and have you really go through that. So you start to really feel and recognize your worth at your core, right? I think that's one of those really important. And I mentioned about fears as well, because we all come with, you know, whether it's fear of failure, fear of rejection, you know, fear of being judged, but also the oft ignored sister to fear of failure is fear of success. So often, especially from some of that deep conditioning, and again, for women in particular, You know, it's not that long ago we couldn't hold property or have the right to vote. So there's a lot of sort of deeply limiting beliefs there. So recognize those fears and recognize, is there some part of you maybe that's afraid of stepping up into the fullness of these positions? Maybe how it's going to change your family life. So really get a handle on owning your value, really get a handle on some of the fears that are driving you. I agree with Paul completely about do your homework and get all of the data, but also a big part of that preparation process, I'd really be encouraging you, Divya, as well, to think, okay, what are the skill set that you already have where you can show examples where you've engaged in skills that are going to help this new company where you want to go in a very practical, concrete way, whether it's sales numbers or but also the intangibles. So, you know, were you a leader within the workplace? Were you a morale booster within the workplace? And also the skill set that you have since that contribution. But also, I'd really sit you down and say, Divya, I want you to really think about for this particular job, what they want from you. What are the things that they and give them some snippets of ideas. Think prospectively. What are some creative outside the box things that you can propose saying, here are some ideas I had, really excited about this prospect and this possibility. And here are some ideas that I would love to be able that I think I can bring to the table for you to give them mm-hmm. a vision of you. In so those are the first tips.
See, so powerful right here. First of all, when you bring diversity. And for me, inclusive leadership is where we are bringing people. It's not about bringing people from diverse backgrounds. To me, it's about diverse experiences. Because when you're coming from two different angles, you can learn so much and come at it. So absolutely. From what I'm hearing over here is that working with your mindset, because you're the one who is going to be marketing yourself and speaking for yourself, knowing your worth. And based on what Paul said, that do your research, because if you don't know your research, and let's say if you have not done anything, worse is if you have done the research. For example, let's say the salary range is between $70,000 to $80,000, and now if you're going and asking for $110,000, you're going to be booted out even before the conversation starts. So both the strategies that you are sharing over here are priceless. And one of the things I'd like to add is that when you're thinking of those nightmare questions, along with that, think about what objections might they have. So just as we talk, and folks, it's not a sales process, because a lot of people say, oh, you know, we need to answer the objections that a customer might have. Think about it. In one way, you are the customer of that company. Yeah. In another way, they are your customer, because people buy from people that they like, know, and trust. So during that time of negotiation, it's important to come from a place that if what can you bring? It's not only about the company bringing you value. And when you're value and impact driven, when you're bringing that value and impact to the table and thinking about, okay, they may be thinking if they're going to give you a higher salary, how are they going to make up for it? And if you could demonstrate, as both of you are sharing about preparation, as to what results could you bring that maybe somebody might require 6 months to get onboarded, whereas you might require only 2 months to get onboarded. And then you can translate that into man hours and what may be the potential salary. So think from that perspective too. So great conversation, folks. Paul, can you share about yourself? Like, you know, where can people find you, your books, and any other thing that you would like to share?
Sure. Well, thank you for asking. So my latest book is You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. And as I mentioned, 8 seconds, 8 seconds comes from Microsoft Research, which says alarmingly, that is the new attention span. So that book is easiest place to find it is Amazon. It's been an Amazon bestseller, and it's in 3 different versions. There's print, of course, there's Kindle. And then I talked my publisher into letting me do the audio version of that, which took 3 days, by the way. It's not a long book. It's under 200 pages, but it still took 3 days in a studio to record to record the book. So that's one piece. And then in terms of the work I do, it's working with business leaders and business professionals on how to make their point, whether it's a long presentation or a short conversation, how to make their point with more impact in less time. And I have a company called Express Potential. ExpressPotential.com is the website. And I've got all sorts of things there that your listeners might appreciate. I've got very short, I try to model what good communication might look like and sound like. So I've got a whole page that just has very fast 2-minute video tips on effective communication.
Well, fantastic. Thank you, Paul, for joining us. Really appreciate the information you have provided.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks, Divya, for the opportunity to do that. So I do both corporate coaching, going in to help, change the corporate culture, whether it's in terms of, unconscious gender biases or sort of step into a more powerful place of negotiation so that they can be sort of more productive and add that value you were talking about, Divya. And I also do private work as well, helping women at this stage only, although I do plan on expanding that, but helping women really learn to step into their most powerful self to leverage their power. So anybody who wants more information, again, for any of the men or women out there, feel free to check out my website at www.womenonpurpose.ca. I've got a number of free ebooks and resources out there. Feel free to check out my TEDx talk. I did a TEDx in November, so just check TEDx Ocala, Cindy Watson on the Rise of the Feminine Voice. You may find that of interest and inspiring. But also, if anybody is interested in sort of maybe going a step further, just check out negotiateyourbestlife.com, and I offer sort of a free breakthrough Negotiate Your Best Life session. So any of those options would be great for people if they're interested in sort of checking out the next steps.
Lovely. Thank you, Cindy, for sharing your experiences and nuggets of wisdom. Both you and Paul did a phenomenal job of sharing a lot of valuable information. So thank you, folks.
Thank you for having us. An interesting conversation. I love how you directed it. You got to a deeper level than that. Typically, you get that sort of superficial Q&A. And I love this discussion, Divya. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Lots of fun. Thank you both.
My pleasure. And thank you for playing along. It really helps when you have people who are up for challenges and grab it at the moment. So thank you, folks. And thank you, listeners, for joining us. Without you, the show would not be possible. You are just amazing and fantastic. And like always, as you'll reach out to me via my email, contact@divyaparekh.com, and ask, what do you want me to bring to you? So continue doing that. And I'm very, very grateful to you for providing that feedback. And I want to thank Rebel for making the show possible and keeping us going. Until next time, folks, be well and take care.
Thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.divyaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.